Welcome to the second episode of Teach Different, Conversations with Autistic Teachers, a limited podcast series brought to you by Teach First. In each episode, you will hear from a Teach First ambassador in a different stage of their career. Today, Jenny Mannion-Crace, Program Welfare and Access Manager at Teach First, interviews a newly qualified early career primary teacher who is in her second year of the Teach First training program.
What's your current job and what do you enjoy most about it?
So I'm currently an ECT1, so I'm in my first year as a qualified teacher and I'm a year two teacher. I absolutely love teaching. I love seeing the children's academic and non-academic progression. I love working with them and I love teaching basically.
So you're in one of our schools now on placement working for them, aren't you?
Yeah, so I'm in my second year of Teach First training as well.
Amazing. And before, if it's okay for me to refer to this, you had mentioned that sometimes it can almost feel like you're the only autistic teacher, like there's not that many resources out there. Could you say a little bit more about how it can sometimes feel? Do you know if you happen to be the only one in your school, for example?
So as far as I'm aware, I'm the only person in my current school who is autistic. I don't know if there's other people who, you know, maybe have it but haven't disclosed it. But as far as I'm aware, it is just me. And I think being autistic, there's specific challenges and it would be nice to talk to other people who are autistic about how they handle these challenges, overcome them, support themselves and look after themselves. And I'm losing my words slightly. I'm very sorry.
If I could ask you a question a little bit about what it's like being autistic at work. First of all, I would like to know if there's like to what extent, if at all, being autistic might be an advantage in your work as a teacher.
So it definitely does have advantages. I think a really key thing is being autistic means I know what it's like to be autistic, and the children that I teach who are neurodiverse or even just have autistic traits, I understand, or I feel like I understand their brain a little bit more. So I think I'm more conscious with my teaching to ensure it's a sensory friendly environment and to ensure my instructions really explicit.
You mentioned about your instruction being really explicit in class, and something others have talked to me about is that as a member of staff, sometimes communication differences can be a challenge for them, like thinking about a member of staff receiving instructions, say from your bosses or other people in your department. That isn't always necessarily clear, or there's things that are implied or subtext that other people have mentioned being difficult to pick up on. I don't know if you relate to that at all, but do you notice anything around communication differences related to your autism at work?
Yeah, so I have actually been talked to about my blunt emails in the past, which I didn't know were blunt. And I know that's a very, very common autistic experience. Fortunately, it led to a conversation between me and SLT about my communication style, their communication style, and it led to almost a mutual understanding of how I do communicate and that it is just, I mean what I say. There's no subtext to it. And from the other perspective, when they're giving me instructions, they know to just say exactly what they mean.
So it sounds like the people around you have tried to understand that you're autistic and that you communicate in a particular way. But maybe I'm inferring here that perhaps people had read a tone into your email, for example, that wasn't there because it was just simply factual or direct, or maybe didn't have some of the usual waffle around it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And something that I have learned to do actually is to go on ChatGPT when I'm sending an email, because ChatGPT can give you the fluff that you need. And sometimes I'll type in my email and just write the prompt, like make this sound more friendly. And then I send it over like revised.
That's a really clever strategy. And I actually will confess to having used that strategy myself. And I find it really, really helpful. So I think others may find that really useful too. Thinking about some of the things you said about feeling that you understand or have a more innate understanding, maybe of your autistic pupils especially. Is there any other areas of your work where you feel like your autism can be a strength or being autistic can be a strength?
I'm very detail-oriented. So when it comes to understanding pupil data, what the barriers are in my classroom, I'm very good at finding those patterns and thinking of solutions to overcome them as well. So for example, in maths, if I've noticed the children aren't able to, you know, add two digit numbers together, I feel like I'm quite good at looking through the actual books and figuring out where exactly it's going wrong and how I can maybe change the way I'm teaching slightly to support everybody.
That's a really important skill to have. And I think a lot of schools would really value like all of their trainees, honestly, feeling more confident with that kind of an approach. Can I ask another question related to being autistic and a teacher? Do you ever feel that it puts you at a disadvantage? I know we talked about communication differences, but I don't know if you feel like that's a disadvantage.
I think the biggest thing is the sensory overload of the classroom. Schools are very, very busy. The lighting isn't always very nice. And sometimes it can be really, really overwhelming in the classroom. I find for me personally, whilst I'm teaching, it's almost you're putting on a show, everything comes together. But as soon as the children leave the classroom, that's when I feel kind of hit by a wave of complete overwhelm and like, oh gosh, I need to just sit down in a dark room. And I don't find that there's many places within the school to go to for that kind of thing. If I'm on PPA and I need a quiet space to work, we only have the staff room that we can work in, which is busy, and it's always after lunch, so it always smells of food, and it's just not the nicest, and that can make it really hard to focus on work and actually get certain things done.
I actually had a question in my mind, which was, if you can remember, it's okay if you can't, your first day going into school, what was that like? And how did you feel when you got home?
I remember coming home, because I remember how tired I felt when I came home. It was like a big kind of pressure headache by the end of the day. I remember it being, I can't quite remember, it's almost like a blur because it feels like it was just such a fast, busy day. And it was great, but it was intense.
But thinking back to that first year, were there any things that you learned to do to support your sensory needs or to support yourself either inside or outside of work in relation to that overwhelm that you mentioned?
So I often use I think they're called Karma earplugs. So they're the ear defenders that you can wear that are really subtle, but you can still hear noise. So they just reduce the frequencies a bit. I find those really helpful. And also tinted glasses I will sometimes use to help with the bright lights. We used to have the old fashioned projectors in my room. So when I was teaching, I was stood in front of a projector, but luckily we've moved on since then and bought new whiteboards, which has been an absolute blessing. At the end of the day and at lunchtimes, I tend to stay in my classroom and turn off my lights. I've had a few comments about being nocturnal and things like that, but it doesn't really matter. And for me personally, lunchtime is a really good time for me to unwind, just get myself back to baseline. So I don't personally socialize at lunchtime, and I think that's okay. But I've had to make sure that I'm still present in other ways.
Just thinking about the fact that you mentioned at the beginning, you've been open with your school about the fact that you're autistic. Do you feel comfortable being open about being autistic at your workplace? And open could just be that you've told HR, or open could be that you've talked about it even with your pupils. There's a whole, it could be many things. So do you feel able to be open?
I do feel able to be open with staff and colleagues. I don't feel like I could be open with parents or children though.
In terms of being open with colleagues, how have they responded to that Have they been supportive or curious or had misconceptions?
I find a lot of colleagues almost ignore it, sort of on a teacher level, don't really want to know about it. And not in an unkind way, but in a, they think that they're treating me like I'm not autistic and that's a compliment. But I would rather there be a bit more curiosity, because then that gives me a chance to voice my experience. I found my SLT have been quite supportive. I wouldn't say they're that curious about it. Again, they don't ask about it, but there's kind of a open door. If there's something we could do to support you, come in and tell us. So I kind of have that relationship where I can say, oh, actually, I work best on my own in PPA. I don't want to be sat with everybody else. That doesn't mean I'm not collaborating, but it's just how I work best.
And they've been open to that? Or did you have some initial conversations where you had to do a bit of negotiating?
I did have some initial conversations where I had to do a bit of negotiating, because it was seen as me being distant and not working well as a team. But actually, I spoke to the team. So I'm in a three-form school, so there's obviously multiple teachers in the year group, but I had a conversation with them about how it's not personal. I just need to sit on my own when I'm doing my lesson planning, but this is the room I'm in. If you really need something, and we have weekly year group meetings, which is where we can then discuss things and work together a bit more.
That sounds like once they've had it explained to them, they've at least accepted it, even if they haven't shown curiosity. Can you imagine a situation that you've been in at school if your colleagues had acted differently and shown more curiosity or even proactively accommodated you as an autistic person?
I am just thinking. So I don't know if this is relevant. I'll just say it anyway.
Go for it.
I struggle when plans change, but obviously when you're a teacher, plans do change. It's an inevitable part of the classroom. And I remember one week our PDM changed day the day before. So it was meant to be one day of the week. And then I was told it was the day before. I'm explaining in the most complicated way ever, sorry. But that really threw me. And I was a little bit upset. I wasn't, you know, sat crying or anything like that. But I was kind of like, well, why? Why has it changed? I didn't know it was going to change. I've got plans. And then I turned around and said, I'm really sorry. I'm just processing. Give me a minute. I just struggle with change. And they said, well, you're in the wrong job then if you don't like change. And I find change hard, but it doesn't mean I can't deal with it. I just deal with it in a slightly different way. I just need a little bit more time to come to terms with that change, to process that change. And at that time, it was just a comment. It wasn't someone trying to, you know, be horrible or anything like that. But I took it quite personally and thought, hang on a minute. You know, I didn't say I can't deal with it. I just find it hard. And yeah.
So no, that is a really illustrative example, because I imagine your colleague who said that was probably making what they thought of as an off-the-cuff comment. Maybe they were being a little hyperbolic, but actually I could totally see, first of all, how being a new teacher as well, you could take that to heart, like anybody could take that to heart. And also you didn't say you can't deal with change. You just said you needed time to process. So what should they have done instead? If they were going to be really supportive of you in that moment, make you feel as comfortable as you could, what would they have done?
I think just asking me what I would like to happen. If I'm struggling to come to terms with something, just saying, how can I help you right now? And that might be me saying, I just need a minute, and then come back and talk to me. But just asking me rather than assuming.
Honestly feel like that is such a basic courtesy thing. I relate to finding that difficult. When you said you were coming to terms with that change, what exactly about it were you coming to terms with? You had mentioned that you had other plans. So was it that you were kind of mentally recalibrating what the rest of that time would need to look like, or was it something else?
it's time for that mental recalibration. I'm not really sure what happens sometimes when I'm processing, but I just need a minute. And if you keep talking to me during that processing time, it almost resets it back and back and back, which means the time it takes for me to come to terms with it is just getting longer and longer.
I wonder if, like, to use a non-school example, like sometimes workplaces announce changes about staffing, or they announce changes about projects or programs or other things that you're going to be doing. And sometimes it can be really helpful for everyone to just have like a minute of thinking time after a big announcement. And that is actually something that I do sometimes in meetings at Teach First, especially when I'm delivering news or even delivering training about how we're going to do something differently than we have before. I'll say, I'm going to give everyone 30 seconds of time to just think, stay on mute. And then I literally set a timer for myself so I don't jump in and start wittering away at them. And I don't know if that kind of a practice, if that was a normal practice, would that help you?
Yeah, definitely. Because then it's also not singling you out for being autistic. It's something that everybody has. And it's something that I think everybody can benefit from. I don't think it's only autistic people that need processing time. It's just presents slightly differently.
This actually echoes a conversation I had with another teacher. They were talking about their pupils doing wet play. I don't know if that is a thing that happens at your school. And they were saying they give their whole class and themselves 3 minutes to just reset after wet play as like a pause before they go on to the next thing. And she said the exact same thing, which is like the people that need that pause, me included, some of my autistic pupils included, and can't do without it, really need it. But everybody benefits. There's not a single pupil in her class that's like, doesn't benefit from having that pause and that transition time. And I think that's such a good point. Like, this accessibility practices can benefit everybody. It's so rare we get enough thinking time at work, generally, I think. Thinking about something you said earlier, you mentioned that you wouldn't necessarily feel able to be open about being autistic with parents, for example. Is there any specific reason for that? Or is that something you wish you could do but don't feel able to?
I don't know, because I think if it was more normalized and we could talk about it, then I think for a lot of parents that would actually be a really positive thing, especially if they had children who were autistic, knowing that their children were getting role models that were autistic. I think that could be quite powerful, but I think there is still a bit of stigma around being autistic, and not all parents would understand. And I just don't know what the reaction of everybody would be. And I just wouldn't want to create any kind of, I wouldn't want parents to be, you know, unsure whether I was still a good teacher or just have any of those misconceptions. But actually, that could then impact my job and their children and comments said at home.
People can sometimes end up feeling quite burdened with a sense that they have to be the visible advocate, and that can come with risks, as you say, and also can be quite fatiguing because you have to be, you're the one experiencing the barriers rather than seeing that they've been cleared out of your way, for example. So other people learn from you, which is great, but they learn from you in a way that is not very good for you as the person. Does that sound relatable at all?
Yeah.
Thinking about others who might come after you on the training program, I've got three questions that are sort of about like advice for others. And my first one is about, especially when they're starting out, balancing with the requirements of a teaching job with their own individual needs, including those needs that are related to being autistic, can be really difficult. So what is your advice to trainees about figuring this out during their first year of teaching?
I think everybody needs to find a way that works for them. For me, so growing up, I was really, really disorganized, and I've learned to organize myself. And that's something that really helps me keep on top of myself. So I always have like a weekly planner out. It's on my desk so I can always see it, because if I hide it away, then I'll forget that it exists very quickly. And it sets out the different jobs that I need to do every week. And I always have a day, it's always a Thursday for me, that I don't plan anything in the evening. And that's my kind of sensory rest day. And I've made the mistake of putting plans on that day in the past, and it's always led to complete fatigue, almost burnout, being really tired. So just knowing every week that I've got that evening to myself to unwind and to give myself the rest that I need, that really, really helps. I always keep my planning ahead. So every Friday, my planning and lesson resources are ready for the week coming up. I find it helpful to be 2 weeks ahead. That just means if I have a particularly tricky week, then I can afford to step back on the planning and just focus on the teaching and not have to worry about everything else. And also looking ahead for the whole year, especially with Teach First, you really do have those pinch points where the assignment's due and all of a sudden everything builds up at once. So it's making sure you're planning ahead for that. So if you know that you've got an assignment due on this day and everything else is going to be happening, make sure your planning is done in advance, because you don't want to be worrying about everything at the same time. Also taking care of your sensory needs, so turning off the lights at the end of the day, turning off the lights at lunchtime. After lunch, we always have a mindful moment, so I turn the lights off with the children and we just calm back down after breaks. I think whether it's wet play or outside play, when they're 6 and 7 years old, they come back absolutely buzzing, wanting to tell you everything that's happened. So I think it's really a good time to just recalibrate and get ready for the afternoon. I'll also sometimes wear the Calm ear defenders, and that especially when we're teaching music. I've had to teach a unit on recorders to 30 children at once before, which was very high pitch and very loud, and it's just taking that time out for yourself after to recalibrate. And also little things like when there's a PDM session or a training session, asking for the agenda ahead of time or the PowerPoint slides, things like that can be really, really helpful.
During that period of time, which I assume is like a unit, so it lasts for a shorter period of time, it's not like the whole school year, did you have to make any changes to how you managed your sensory needs or how you kind of managed yourself in that time to cope with the additional load? Yeah. Because that to me sounds like it would be doubly fatiguing, but maybe it's not.
So it was a unit, so we have like a kind of topic afternoon, so it was over a week, so four afternoons of the whole week were recorder, and it was exhausting. There's no way around it. I had a headache every day. I felt really restless and irritable at home, and I just had to get through it. I just had to grin and bear it, to be honest, because sometimes there are things that are really rubbish to deal with. And I don't think anyone would enjoy being in a room with 37-year-olds playing recorder, autistic or not autistic. So yeah, just going home, having a bath, looking after yourself after is all you can do. And then making sure at the weekend you do nothing.
I'm hearing in this the importance of planning for yourself and then sticking to your plan of when to have rest time. And that isn't social time, and that is actual recovery time. And I want to highlight that for non-autistic or neurotypical people listening to this, lots of people will think about time outside of work. And one of the things that's very important to people, probably even to you, I imagine, and to me as well, but within the context of needing sensory rest, rest breaks, proper recovery times, work-life balance also means work-rest balance. We also know that from wider research that's been done looking at autistic teachers, that recovery time is, everyone needs it, yes, but there's a specific element of needing that, or you might suffer, as you say, you could lead to burnout.
The research reference here was undertaken by the Autistic School Staff Project. More information can be found on their website and in the published manuscript, Learning from Autistic Teachers, How to Be a Neurodiversity Inclusive School, a collection of essays written by autistic educators and edited by Dr. Rebecca Wood.
if you don't protect that time. And it's helpful that you've actually said that explicitly. Times when you haven't kept that rest time, that you've made plans instead, have not actually served you well. It has actually set you back in terms of energy and being able to manage your job, which is a busy job. If a school was going to try to really be more supportive and inclusive of an autistic trainee, let's say they haven't had somebody knowingly before who's autistic working in the school, what advice would you give to their senior leadership team?
I think, firstly, making sure that the mentors working closely with the autistic teachers, especially if they're a Teach First trainee or an ECT, have some kind of training on adults with autism, and that is up to date, because I think there's been a real shift in our understanding of autism over the last few years, especially with girls and masking, and understanding that just because you don't see that person's behaving in a really stereotypical autistic way, it doesn't mean they're not facing barriers, they're not struggling. I think another thing is having really clear policies, things like marking and feedback, you know, how to request absences when that's needed, just all that policy about when things need to happen in a certain way. Don't assume that the person is going to just pick up on things like dress code and ordering lunches, small things like that. But having it all written down, I find really, really useful. Also having kind of a shared agenda. So in my school, we have like a year plan, and that highlights all of the different training sessions we're going to have, all the inset days, and then all of the odd days. Like, I remember once we had a rhino day, which is really weirdly specific.
As in the animal, the rhinoceros. Yeah. Okay, just checking.
It was a really, really interesting day, but it was random. But it's useful to have it all laid down, because then you think, hang on a minute, what's going on that day? And you can find out and prepare yourself, because I think those off timetable days are sometimes the hardest, because you lose that structure and routine, and that's hard for the children and for all staff, really. So it just means that you can figure out what's going on ahead of time.
So just to recap that, it sounds like there's a lot of just, oh, everybody knows how to do this thing, but actually being really explicit in writing down, documenting your processes and your procedures and everything really clearly, so that somebody who's brand new can understand them.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to Teach First so that our training program can be more supportive and inclusive of autistic trainees?
So the thing that sort of screams out at me is the in-person days, because the in-person days, as useful as they are extremely busy. They are often in a smaller room with lots of people in it. And again, they are really useful. It's really great to meet other people, but I think it would be useful to have a clear space that you can leave, or even more breaks within sessions planned, because I've gone before and I've taken myself out for breaks, but you do feel quite uncomfortable in this big room with everybody watching as you get up and walk out a couple of times. So I think just planning breaks in just a little bit to that.
Everybody probably finds it some level of tiring, like that's a human thing. Like, you get to almost the end of your week and then you have to go back in after travel. But again, specific to being autistic, there are lots of elements of those in-person days, from the travel to the loudness and busyness of the day, the social expectations of the day, etc., to then having to go back into your kind of routine when it's been out of routine, that could all add up to like a really challenging time. So something I have in my mind is, could we potentially look at a way to cover for those teachers that need it on that Friday, so that you either don't have to be in school first thing or don't have to be in school that day at all. Now, I don't know how realistic that is, because some of that depends on what's going on in school, right? Like, if school's being offsetted, they might like freak out that you're out for 2 days. But it's something I've thought about, because I think it would, you know, when those days are going to be, somebody could plan in advance, and you could, 2 days of lesson planning isn't that much more difficult to do than one day of lesson planning for somebody who's covering for you, I wouldn't imagine. I don't know what you think, if that sounds like a really good or a really terrible suggestion.
Yeah, I think so. Even if it was the morning or the first session, just coming in a bit. But then that then throws off routine. So
yeah, I hear you.
It's a hard one. I think, yeah. Or even it ending slightly earlier so you can get home in time. Because you can end up, so mine are always in London. So I've always got to come back from London. And there's been some days because of train times and train cancellations that I've actually come home quite late.
Yeah. We've talked about it quite a few times of thinking about different ways we could make those in-person days as accessible as possible, given that for some people there'll always be a level of challenging because of the nature of them. Like, not everybody loves a conference, let's face it. This has been a really valuable conversation. Is there anything else that you were really keen to say?
I think the only other thing I want to say is, when we're going through our training, there's a big push on what's good for SEND is good for all, and about making our classrooms accessible for all children. And I think sometimes it feels like it stops in the classroom, but actually that stays true for adult life as well. And I think if we could just be a bit more open about that, because a lot of the times the things you're doing in your classroom are really supportive of neurodiverse children. And actually, we all have a lot of skills that could support everybody, but especially neurodiverse adults. And it's just utilizing that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Teach Different, Conversations with Autistic Teachers. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it widely. Remember to subscribe to catch all future episodes. The podcast is now available on all major podcast platforms. Thank you again for listening and supporting Teach First's ambition to help every child fulfill their potential.